Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to another show of Investing Simplified. You're listening on, do you guys hear?
I think we're good.
Okay. What? It just sounded kind of dead. Anyway, I just wanted to make sure we were on the air. Beautiful day, Saturday morning in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to our show. You can reach us toll-free at 1-800-990-0750. That's 800-990-0750. So give us a call, ask us a question. And in studio today is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Carl. And Kevin Zayu with the Baker Colson CPA firm.
Good morning. We have a full house today.
Absolutely. You know, got tax season done. Now it's now we need to start thinking about summer and spring and having the sun come out like today. What a gorgeous day. Absolutely. Maybe get out and play a little golf on the weekend or just go for a walk and enjoy the beautiful scenery we have here in the Northwest.
You know, actually, I got here early this morning I just wandered up and down a few blocks just for fun, and it was very interesting. It was really nice and cool, and the city was waking up. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it really is. You know, there's something about a city when you walk through it in the morning, particularly when there's nobody around. Yep. Pretty amazing. Well, listen, this show is about investing. It's about estate planning, about taxes, and we're here to answer your questions. I do want to make sure of one thing, that we try to simplify things for you. That's why we call it Investing Simplified, but we try to simplify taxes and estate planning as well. And I do want to drive you. I've updated my current website, and I've got a couple of new things on there. One, that you can go on there and you can request your complimentary financial checkup, and that's available on the website at pfgwm.com. And the other thing that a lot of people have been coming in talking to me about, and I know they've ended up talking to Carl and Kevin as well, is we've been doing a lot of people maximizing their Social Security benefits. And I have a special link on there now that you can click on, fill out a form, and contact our office, and we can do a maximization of your Social Security. And I got to tell you, I've done a couple this past couple of weeks, and this past week particularly, we help people save get income over their lifetime, as little as $40,000, and one we had was $140,000 difference of income. Now, I don't care what age you are. If you can increase your lifetime income by $140,000 or $100,000 or $40,000, that's money in your pocket, that's not a bad deal.
Yeah, that's right. Now, most of this Social Security planning needs to be done before benefits are started to be claimed, or can it?
Yeah, you've got to do it prior. So really, the people that really need to be looking at that is somebody between the age of 55 and 65 or 70, if you have not started taking Social Security, because it's a strategy. There are thousands of options. I mean, thousands of options. And to go through it and try to do it by yourself is very, very difficult. We have a computer program, thank goodness for computers, that can analyze it for you based on your income and your earnings. The thing I do encourage everybody is the Social Security report you and I get, and you go on, if you go online, Kevin, you're too young, but Carl, you go online and look at your Social Security benefit. I think you can too, though, Kevin. It's just that it's a little far out there. But anyway, you go on there and you look at it. The fact is, it's always 2 years behind. So we encourage people that, look, the benefit that you're seeing may or may not be the benefit you're going to get. And if you've had rising income, there's a good possibility that that benefit's going to be better. So we always encourage you to do our review, check it out. But before you take any action, you need to verify it with the Social Security Department. You need to go in there and sit down. And I know it takes time to do that. But you know what? if it made a difference of $100,000 of income to you, I think that's worth a day at a governmental agency to kind of get through things. Just might be worth it. Well, listen, I'm going to talk a little bit about the market here real quick. And the market's been very, very volatile. And I'm rather than talking about the stock market rates of return and everything else, people who listen to the show regularly know that I've not been one that has been convinced that we've had any kind of recovery at all. In fact, I think we're probably in the worst. Well, I know we're in one of the worst decades in the last 80 years. And unfortunately, it's extended into the second decade of the new century, and it continues to be that way. And one of the things I constantly talk to people about is what's called the drawdown effect on your retirement. When you retire, if you retired in 2007 or 2008, the average mutual fund took anywhere from 4.5 to 10 years to recover. And some have not recovered yet, and that's why I say 10 years. I can show you some mutual funds that started in 2000 when this market started, actually in 99. We always go back to 12/31/99 to show what's happened in this long-term bear market. When that happened, there are people who have some funds, and I can show them to you, that have never got back to full value. Now, if you're contributing to a 401k and you're a younger guy like Kevin, volatility is your friend. This is a great, I mean, this bad market has been a great opportunity for young people to dollar cost average into their 401k, or for even older people to dollar cost average into your 401k, make those monthly contributions, because you're buying and you're investing into the market at cheap prices sometimes. Sometimes you get hit the high because it goes up and down, up and down, up and down. But long term, if the markets do rally and come back and 2022 and really take off, like have another roaring bull market, those dollars are going to be exponential in return. Just like I tell people, when you put a lump sum in, if you're going to invest lump sum, don't invest it in a mutual fund. I'm telling you right now, don't do it unless you know the recovery history of that mutual fund. If you don't know the recovery of that mutual fund, then if you got a lump sum, 99.9% you are going to be way better off being in a managed portfolio versus a mutual fund. Mutual fund, by law, has to stay invested in the market anywhere from 80 to 90%, even if the market, that's why if you're working with a financial advisor who sells mutual funds, their first word is going to be when the market crashes and you call them, they're going to say, hold on, hold on. They're going to tell you that. They have to, because that thing's going to go down and it's going to take 4 to 5 years to recover, and they can't go to cash. You don't have enough time to call all your clients and move everybody to cash. It's just not set up that way. However, if you're in a fee-based managed account that has a strategy of going to cash in when the market hits the fan, that's a whole, it's like apples and oranges. There's no comparison. And the real no comparison comes is if you're retired. Just imagine this. You have a fund. You stick all your life savings in a mutual funds, and 2008 happens, and they go down an average of 42 to 50%. Now, the average fund went down about 50. But I've seen some really high-quality funds that have went down 62%. But let's say it went down 50%, and it takes you 5.5 years to recover on that original investment you put in, but you're drawing money out of it every single month for retirement. What do you think happens to your retirement portfolio? It's in deep trouble, because you can't afford to play catch up when you're retired. When you're young, playing catch up is a luxury, and actually it's a good thing. For young people, volatility is a good thing, because if you're putting money in the market and you're not putting lump sums in the market, if you're dollar cost average in the market, it's a really great thing. But for people who have to say, you know, I'm going to retire in a year or two, and I really can't take the risk of that money taking a big hit, those people have to be in some kind of a managed program that is defensive. And I, you know, looking at funds and looking at portfolios for the first quarter of the year, I know some managed portfolios, now these are not guaranteed returns, but they're up 2% for the first quarter. And a lot of the market's only up 1.5%. So nothing wrong with that. Very conservative type investments. It's when you're retired, the number one thought you got to have is, how long is my money going to last? And believe me, if you take a big hit, a 50, 40 to 50% hit, and you got to recover 5 years or 6 years or who knows how long, that's not going to work in retirement. Just not going to work.
It's like, you know, the sinking ship, you know, holding on is not a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a reason why they have lifeboats on sinking ships. Is because when that thing starts going down, they get the heck out of there. You know, or as the cowboys say, they get out of Dodge, you know. But you get out of there. You don't stay in it. And I don't know why we've been, because we know that staying in the market long term, you're going to end up making money. The key is how much money are you really going to make? And, you know, I ran the numbers, you know, on the S&P, and I am going to revert back to that and just say that real quick. On the Dow Jones, if you had hung in there, if you put your money in a lump sum on 12/31/99, and you'd stuck your money in it for the 13 years and 4 months, you would be up a total of 3.17% per year. That's per year. You're talking about a fund that 80 years before that averaged almost 9%. The S&P, if you'd invested in that on 12/31/99, this is the top 500 growth stocks in America, folks. You're up 2.01% per year. You're up a whopping 26% for 13 years and 4 months. That is not exciting. That is not exciting. If you don't have a strategy, if you don't have an investment strategy, you need to pick up the phone and give me a call at my office, or go to pfgwm.com. And I'll tell you what, right now we're in the process of updating our website. We have some really good information on there about how do you choose an advisor? How do you choose an advisor that has a fiduciary responsibility directly to you, not to a company, not to a broker-dealer, not to anything else, but a fiduciary responsibility to you, the investor? I think that is where you want to have your money. We also have some featured links there and stories. Of course, I got a link there to Carl and Kevin's website as well. And we've got our past shows that you can go on and listen to our past shows, which we had a good show last week here with when Rodney Johnson came on. And I got to give him kudos. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah. He's got a good he's got some humor to him.
Yeah, if you ever meet the guy, I mean, he, like I've said before on here, he reminds me of Dick Cavett. He really, I mean, physically, he just looks like him. And he's very eloquent in the way he talks. Guy does a great job. Well, listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified. We're going to come right back with Carl's comments. And if you got any questions, give us a call, because we like to make the show interactive. You can call us at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626, or toll free 800-990-0750. That's 800-990-0750. Investing Simplified, and we'll be right back.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. We do it.
Let's face it, the rules of retirement have changed. What we were told to do just a few years ago now seems like a pipe dream. Hi, this is Michael Burnett for Chuck Price, owner of Price Financial Group Wealth Management. You know the drill. Be a loyal employee. You'll get a pension. Your home will be worth 10 to 20 times what you paid for it when you retire. So how's that working for you? Call Chuck Price right now. He's located right here in Portland. Featured expert on Investing Simplified on AM 970. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or close to retiring, and he focuses on protection of principal and tax strategies to minimize your taxes. Call right now and get Chuck's retirement report. It's packed full of information on generating more income during retirement, how to leave more to your heirs, and so much more. 503-253-3000. Chuck Price, Price Financial Group Wealth Management, on the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503 417-7626. Here's Carl Jepsen.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl's Comments, and Carl's Comments usually has to do with something that I've thought about during my last week in practice, and this is a subject that I think has changed over the years a little bit, and that is when an elderly person decides to have either friends or family members move into their home, sort of as a companion, maybe as a caregiver, or maybe just be trying to help them out. But, and this is fraught with some problems, or could be. In the old days, quite frankly, it was a very commonplace thing, and I think it still is to some extent. But I think the motivations have changed somewhat. It used to be that this was just the way people did in their families. They just, you know, the family moved in, or vice, or mom moved in with the family, whichever way it was. And that was just the way it was. No one had any expectations beyond they were taking care of mom. And now those expectations tend to be a little bit mixed, I think. And so my comment today has to do with questions you should ask before you move your friends or relatives into your home to be with you or to take care of you. And first of all, ask yourself, what is your relation with this people, with them? Do you really know them? I mean, really know them? Do you really trust them? Be honest with yourself. Do you really trust them? Do you really like them? You know, do you really want them living with you, or do you really want to live with them? I mean, really think about it overall. Not do you like them to come visit you, or do you like them to come have dinner with you or take you out to go shopping? Do you really want to live with them? And I mean, there's a lot of people that I know that I love to visit, but I don't want to live with them. And I don't want to travel with them, quite frankly, either. I don't want to spend a night in a motel room with them. And I don't know. So if they're, you know, if they're not good travelers and motel room people, you sure as heck don't want them living in your house. So anyway, the other thing is why are you doing this? Why are you doing this in the first place? Is it because you really need help, or is it because they really need help? That's another different thing. You know, if you're elderly or, you know, whatever, do you really want to take on more responsibility at this time in your life? Do you want to really have burdens on you rather than burdens on them? I don't know. It's a hard question to ask. So that's a very important thing. Ask yourself, what are their expectations? Are they coming for free rent? Do they just want free food? You know, they like your big TV? Or are they really altruistic? Do they really want to take care of you? Many of them will say that, but some don't mean it. And that's very important. And if they're really giving you care, is that what the purpose is? Then are they really qualified to do that? Do they have the skills to do what needs to be done? Maybe you have some peculiar medical needs. Maybe you have to have someone who is knowledgeable enough to manage medications and to know when things are going wrong. And maybe they don't have that kind of skill. What are they going to do for you anyway? Are they going to come in and help you, or are they going to just come in and stay there? Is it really realistic to do this? So how will they be paid? Or are they going to be paid? Or are they expecting you to give them some big inheritance? This is the most common thing I hear all the time. Well, they lived in my house, and so they said, well, gee, all you got to do is, Grandma, you know, you just give us the house when you die, and we'll be happy. Well, yeah, I bet they are. They will be. That's a big step, and quite frankly, that, depending on the person and the motives, that may very well be a fine thing. But sometimes it amounts to financial elder abuse, so try not to subject yourself to that. That shouldn't be their motivation to come in to visit with you and to stay with you. And so I'd be cautious with that. And here's a real important thing that you should ask yourself. What baggage do they bring with them? Are they smokers? Are they drinkers? Do they do drugs? Have they got boyfriends and girlfriends that do any of those things? Do they have children that'll drive you nuts? They have dogs, hamsters, snakes, you know, biker gang friends. I realize that's a little bit out on the edge of things, but believe me, it happens. You know, people have these friends that are that are in there, and the friends are even, they have no loyalty to anybody. So you know, if they show up and end up living with you too, you've got a real big problem. And then the next big question is, how do you get them out if it doesn't work out?
How do you do that? It's not that easy. You're probably going to end up in some kind of a court battle, and you're living there right with these people when you're trying to get them kicked out. So here's a couple of thoughts on how to avoid those kinds of problems. Number one, before you ever let them in the door, don't give them a key, don't give them your phone number, don't let them come in until you've consulted with your friends and family who know you well and who know these people. Just make sure that they're okay with it. That's a good step. If they're okay with it and they don't think that it's going to be a problem, well, maybe you have some reason to go forward. And then once you've thought it over, if you think it's okay and your friends and family think it's okay, then write down the answers to the questions that I just gave you and write them down and put them in the form of an agreement and then go talk to your lawyer. Because there are some issues about how you pay these kinds of things and how they're taxed and what things you might have to do. And I'll leave that up to Kevin. But I know that it's not as easy as it might seem, especially when you're trading services for services. And so that's another thing. And finally, look into your heart and say, do I really, really, really want to do this? And that's Carl's comments.
You know, and I think that's very sound advice, because we've seen throughout the years people get themselves in situations with other people who started out being friends of the family who really weren't always friends of the family but were looking at free money. You know, a way of picking up an estate that maybe from an inheritance-wise it wasn't really to go to them in the first place.
Well, and I'm certainly not trying to disparage anyone from doing this if it's a really good situation. Because let's face it, you know, in-home care is really expensive, and people get really lonely. And there are some really, really good circumstances that come about. And I suppose that a lot of them are just fine. And it's probably – I'm probably a little bit more jaded than some because I'm a lawyer. And we see the bad parts of human behavior. But it is not at all uncommon that these kinds of situations start out in a very, you know, seemingly perfect way, and they deteriorate really rapidly. And you bring people in, and the next thing you know – your life is just crazy. I mean, it just becomes miserable. And then you have this big fight, and then you alienate other family members, and it can be just so difficult. So really, really give it great consideration, and be sure everyone knows what the expectations are. Interestingly enough, some years ago, I prepared one of these agreements, and I remember I looked up the rules under the Internal Revenue Code and all that stuff to draft this agreement. And I think they've changed now that I think about it. But anyway, and you know, so I set forth in this agreement the responsibilities of the parties that were moving in, and it set forth a mechanism to get them the heck out if it didn't work out. They didn't sign it. So somehow it didn't seem like if their motives had been pure, they would have had no problem putting it into writing. And so there you go.
I have a lot of difference of, it's kind of funny you mention that, because I have a lot of difference opinion depending on the situation on a prenuptial agreement.
Absolutely.
Kind of the same thing. And
yep.
And if somebody's, there are a lot of famous court cases on prenuptial agreements. Lee Marvin kind of comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of stories about prenuptial agreements, and the intention of a prenuptial agreement is that it's actually going to be a marriage. That you're not just marrying them for the money.
Yeah, and you're planning ahead, but actually in a way you're sort of planning to fail. I mean, you're planning an exit strategy, which you're not really. That's the tension of the prenuptial agreement, and it also it does create a little bit of a chilling effect on the marriage, the trust aspect of it. But you know, under certain circumstances, I can see it as a valuable thing. But I think if you're alone and you're elderly and you know you're trusting, then it's very important to kind of try to step outside that, try to become a little bit detached and neutral, and have some neutral, detached people give you real sound advice as to whether or not this is really a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Snakes and hamsters, eh? They think the last thing you want to do is to open your door to an unruly hamster into your home.
Well, so, you know, it's those little wheels, and they run around in them all the time.
What about alligators?
Makes a lot of noise.
That's right. Well, you know, I became aware of a situation that exactly fits your bill here, where an elderly lady let her grown daughter come into the house to help take care of her, to live with them, and help the daughter. Well, unbeknownst to the elderly lady, the daughter's boyfriend was the bad voice in the other side of her ear, not knowing they were involved in some things that she would never have wanted that in her house, and ended up being talked into taking a mortgage out on her fully paid for home, giving it to the daughter.
Preach it, brother.
I know. And ultimately the FBI got involved. I mean, wow. Talk about just opening the door to a lot of trouble. And now she's on the hook for the, you know, a large mortgage that she shouldn't have had to pay. So definitely something to watch out for.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say something about that. And if one of your kids or one of your friends want you to go and pull all the equity out of your home to help them start a business or to invest in a opportunity, believe me, from my history of being in the financial business, that usually is not a good deal for you, the person taking out the loan, because it's awful hard to get the money back when they have no money.
Well, and even if they're well-intentioned, sometimes businesses fail. Sometimes the things that they invest in fail. And if that's the case, you know, you've just given them an early inheritance and made your life a little more difficult.
Yeah, I believe the numbers are something like about 3% of the businesses that start out succeed after 5 years. And so really, the odds are really against you investing in a new idea or a new business. Sure, some of them hit home runs, like, you know, Facebook and Microsoft and those kind of things. But the reality is there's tons of failures in between those big hits.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why the entrepreneur often takes big risks. But people who are in the autumn of their lives are at the point where they, you know, they want to coast. They don't want to take a big risk anymore. And I mean, I wouldn't. And I'm not quite in the autumn yet, I don't think, but that depends on who you're talking to.
Hey, the 60s is the new 40s.
Yeah, maybe, but yeah, I was talking to some young kid the other day, he was looking at me, and I said, "Well, how old do you think I am anyway?" And he says, "I don't know, 55." And I thought, well, thank you very much. But I mean, you know, to the kid, I mean, the 55 was like really old. And you know, to me, I was saying that wasn't so bad. 55 was okay, you know.
It sounded pretty good. That's great. Well, listen, we're going to come right back with Kevin's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified. If you would like to join the conversation and you have a question, this is your opportunity to ask an attorney, a financial advisor, or a CPA for free. Give us a call, 503-417-7626. Or toll-free 800-990-0750. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over 3 decades, and its 9 attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege. CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
You are listening to Investing Simplified. Give us a call, 503-417-7626, if you have a question or a comment or want to join our conversation. And today, I'm going to continue our topic from last week, which I didn't get to the meat of some of the tax planning I wanted to talk about regarding community property versus common law stepped-up basis issues regarding estates. And so we'll kind of address that quickly. But one thing to chat about briefly beforehand, and Chuck, you may be kind of aware of this, one of the things that our esteemed leader, Commander-in-Chief, has been trying to put into play is what's called a MYRA account, M-Y-R-A. Instead of an IRA account, it's a MYRA account. And this is basically an account that's intended to help taxpayers who are, say, roughly making around $200,000 or under per year to save for retirement, and they'll be able to make initial investments as low as $25 and as small continuing investments as $5 into these retirement savings account is basically what they are, and they'll be backed by the U.S., the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Yes, Chuck.
Oh, that makes me feel good.
Exactly right. Now, you're going to be hearing about these, and your employer may start offering these MYRA accounts. It's a after-tax contribution that you make. It'd be real similar that if you were to receive a net check of, say, $1,000 each month, and you put $100 into your savings direct deposit, and you put the $900 into your checking direct deposit. Well, you could have this $100 go to this MYRA account, and the key difference with something like this, and you'll be hearing them come out here in later this year in 2014. But consider first maybe the Roth IRA option, because this is really no different than a Roth, except that it lets you get in with really small money. So if $25, if you need to cobble together money to get together your first investment of $25, well, then maybe this is a good way to go. You know, some people making $175,000 probably don't need to cobble together $25 to make an initial investment to get this type of account going. Once this account would reach $15,000 of savings, you have to put it into a proper retirement account like a Roth IRA, so on and so forth. So, try to look at the Roth option first. Probably the drawback to the Roth option is the small fees that may be applicable to that, such as your $35 annual fee, if that's a big deal to you. I don't really think that's a big deal, because with a Roth, you've got a lot of other investment options as opposed to being locked into this savings account. So anyway, just know that that's coming down the line. You'll be hearing about it. You may have that option available for you from your employer. And if you have any questions on us, give us a call about it.
Something to really get excited about.
I can tell you're
What are the employer's responsibilities for one of these things?
You know, not too much. It's like any other account that they they don't even host the account. They're not even the trustee over it. They simply remit the funds to wherever it's going. I guess it's the U.S. government. I don't know. That doesn't really excite me to have the U.S. government holding my after-tax retirement savings, but that's just me personally.
So there's no matching or anything like that? It's not like
no.
A 401k?
No, okay. This is just you making your own savings for retirement, which is a good thing, but consider the Roth IRA first, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. One other item that I think is I think it's a neat planning opportunity, and I'm going to look at it. We're going to come at it from an angle of the limiting rule that the IRS has on it, but it kind of opens your eyes to, hey, that could potentially work in my situation. And it's an estate planning technique. And the rule says that if somebody passes away, there's an item of their property that doesn't get stepped up basis. And that is if they have been given appreciated property within a year of their death, and that property is going to go back to the original donor, you do not get stepped up basis. In other words, if you think about it, it's a great planning opportunity. You have an elderly parent, maybe it's the last one living, and you have a child, a grown child that has made in an investment that has significant gains in it. Maybe it's a stock investment, or maybe it's a house or something like this. That child gifts the property to the elderly parent because the parent is well under the $1 million, we'll say a $500,000 estate. They gift this property with a $100,000 gain in it. The parent holds it for over a year, passes away, that item of property gets stepped up basis, goes back to the child, and now they've got no gain.
Yeah, the scary part of that is long-term care and Medicaid, because what if the senior doesn't die? They go on cardiac arrest and they're on life support for 2.5 years, and they spend all that money that you gave to them.
Absolutely. There's a
very big risk there.
This fits only certain types of scenarios, but in a close family where maybe the child is the one taking care of the parent.
Yeah, it really all relates to, in part, a trust issue, because if you not a trust like a legal trust, but I mean like trusting the person, because let's suppose that you know mom or dad is really, you know, they're very well, their health is good, and all things considered, they probably will live through the year. And then the question is, yeah, but what if they don't give it back? What if Candy the caregiver shows up and says, "Hey, pops, you know that this house is pretty nice. How about we stay?" I'm not saying it can't be unwound somehow, but it would be difficult and expensive to do, and it wouldn't, you know, do a lot for family tranquility.
It sounds like a difficult unwind to me.
Well, it could be. Yeah, I mean, it could be very bad.
Yeah.
So it's a good planning tool. I can see how that would really work. It works to the child's benefit for the most part. Really. So.
Yeah. If it fits your situation very specifically, it could be a very good thing.
Yeah. If the parents are well healed and they have a lot of assets, where even if they went into a long term care situation, they wouldn't eat up all the assets.
Mm-hmm.
Then I could see taking the risk, but with 1 out of 4 people using long-term care or having to be in long-term care assistance for 2 years, you'd be running a 25% is a high-risk option to me if you're putting yourself in jeopardy. So I don't know. It'd really have to be the exact
situation.
Yeah, it really would.
Yep. Okay, so to finish off our topic from last week, community property versus common law states, taxation of inheritances. And just to revisit the rules very briefly, if you're in a community property state such as Washington, Idaho, Nevada, California, when the first spouse dies, both spouses' assets get a stepped up in basis if certain parameters are met, and it's fairly easy to meet that. In a common law state like Oregon, when the first spouse dies, only that spouse's asset gets stepped up basis. So it's
Well, I was going to say, and what that means in a practical sense is that, say, for example, one of the assets is the family home, and the family home is held as husband and wife. So each one owns 1/2. That means that the surviving spouse, half of the value is at the value that they acquired it. And half of the value is the stepped-up basis so you kind of have this little calculation to make at the time that it gets sold, if you're going to look at capital gains or any of that kind of stuff.
And when all the assets are owned 50-50 and you've split off 50% of every single asset into a trust, such as real estate, and 50% doesn't, and it gets a stepped-up basis, and then 50% stays with the surviving spouse and doesn't get stepped up in basis, you wonder why tax returns are expensive.
It's really
an accounting nightmare.
Yeah, those kind of accounting things are, and then, you know, trying to figure out what the basis was and what's the value now. That's why we hire you.
you know, Kevin, bringing that up that's kind of an interesting subject too, because if you have a spouse that did inherit that, and let's say the property was in their trust. and they decided to sell the property. So now that they're single, they're not married, they don't have the $500,000 exemption, they only have the $250,000 exemption, or are they allowed to go back and say, we were married previously, so we never took our $500,000 exemption, we want to do it now? How's that law work?
Regarding principal residence, half held in a trust,
yes.
half owned individually. I off the top of my head, I believe you are going to get the it sticks in my mind, you may get the full $500,000 on that. But I would want to, one spouse has already passed and the other's in a credit shelter. You probably get the $250,000, but it would probably apply to just the one half, I'm thinking.
But if you did it within a period, is there a period of time, or does that happen the day the spouse passes away? From that point on, the surviving spouse only gets the single benefit, or is there a carryover for that double death benefit?
Those are good questions, Chuck.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you a curve.
Well, yeah,
it's just that your question brought that up in my head, so I was thinking.
That's a very good point, because one of the things that the laws are extremely complex in all of these things, and these are the kinds of things that you're, in order to find the real answer to all of that, you're probably going to have to work your way through the code, the regs, and the revenue rulings, and all of that stuff, all the way down to, you know, and even case law to find out how that might really work.
Yeah, and that one would probably have an exact example in the regulations to address that, because that's a fairly common situation, which I don't have off the top of my head. Thank you very much.
Well, we were playing Stump the CPA, weren't we?
We're talking about community property.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So anyway, continuing on. So,
yeah, but you know what community property is between a husband and a wife, right?
No.
What's hers is hers, and what's his is hers.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Very good. Very good. Okay. So
you want to give him the telephone number now? Or
no.
So. All right.
Yeah, call Kevin to straighten out your community property problems at 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750.
That's right. I get no respect. So typically you want to preserve community property treatment on your assets. And so what we want to look at is when you're moving from a community property to a common law state or from common law to community property, what are some options available? And as Carl and I were talking after last week's show, let's say you're moving from Oregon to Washington. That's a fairly common scenario because mm-hmm. you're maybe trying to escape Oregon's $1 million estate tax.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have taken all of this common law property that you've acquired in Oregon that is separate ownership. You're now into Washington. What would be...
Well, ordinarily, one of the changes that you would have in your estate plan, if you'd make that move, is you would probably draft what's called a marital property agreement. And the marital property agreement allows you to characterize your assets either as, you can characterize them any way you want, but most commonly, I think, is you say, we're going to take advantage of this, and we're calling all of our property community property. I mean, that's the most common way to do it.
That's right. And now you've got your property all into the community property designation, and you would get the stepped up in basis. Now, if you come from Washington to Oregon, you're bringing community property into common law area jurisdiction, and if you haven't made a plan to make sure those community property assets at that time stay community property, and you don't do what's called commingling with your common law assets that you acquire once you're in Oregon, it's all going to become
become separate property.
Exactly.
But I think you can keep the character of the property. Oregon will recognize the community property nature of
exactly.
the property if you choose to do so, but you do have to avoid, you know, like taking the funds and buying another house with it, and then you buy it in Oregon, and then you need an accountant to figure out how to track the community property.
And I know what word you're angling to use for us on this one. Transmutation.
Oh, yeah, transmutation. Yes. I like that, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So you've transmuted your community property to separate property. So anyway, that's just know those options are available and very important to address. If you're moving from state to state, I think it's important to have somebody take a look at that and make sure that you're not missing a major a tax planning opportunity. There are times you do want to keep it separate, such as if there's maybe a divorce coming up or something like that. You know, this isn't always the best thing to do. There's other things than tax planning to consider.
You know, there's an interesting thing. Unfortunately, when divorce occurs, even if you've done, let's suppose that you've done very careful and detailed estate planning, and you have a substantial estate, and divorce raises its ugly head. Well, guess what? All bets are off. So that estate plan, you know, it's going to change a whole lot after that.
Exactly. And then one last time that you may not want to do community property planning is if maybe it's a marriage later in life and you want his assets to go to his kids, her assets to her kids, you could keep that separate with a specific plan.
Yeah, actually, I've actually had a case where we kind of did that, and they had his kids, her kids, his property, her property, and we actually ended up doing three trusts, his, hers, and theirs.
Oh.
Yeah, worked out good, at least so far.
Very good.
Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break and come back with the Knowledge Trust. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Give us a call at 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. If you've had difficulties calling in, we've had a little bit of problem with our engineer. I'm not sure if we can get calls or not, but try to give us a call if you can. And you can always email me, askchuck@pfgwm.com, and let me know if you've had difficulty trying to call in. Thank you very much.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had $1 million.
Well, if you've got $1 million, give us a call, and you better make it quick because we're on the last 12 minutes of the show. And if you want to ask a question, this is your opportunity. Give us a call, 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. Kevin, you look like you had a question.
I've got the cat's got the canary. Regarding your question on the taxation of a principal residence with a half in a trust and half owned by a surviving spouse, the trust side is going to have a stepped-up basis, so you're going to have little to no gain on that half, and the surviving spouse gets a $500,000 exclusion if it's sold within 2 years of the date of death, provided all the other rules are met.
See, I knew you'd have the answer. Now, look at that. Is that quick?
Okay. Does this also count if it's a credit shelter trust?
That's right. Because the credit shelter trust is going to get the half stepped up basis.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that is good news, really.
It is.
I mean, if you've had clients who have passed away in less than 24 months, that is an opportunity to sell their residence.
That's right. The only caveat is the surviving spouse can't have remarried within that 2-year period. Otherwise, the rules change on them.
Oh, what the date of marriage?
No, if the surviving spouse remarries within 2 years, then the rules are going to change regarding how much of the gain and exclusion they get. They don't get their deceased spouse's $250,000.
Okay, that's if they do it after the marriage, not prior to the marriage. Because what if they do it in the first year?
Yeah.
And then on the 13th month, they get married.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. Listen, I do want to mention, if you go to my website, pfgwm.com, I have an excellent video on Social Security. And if you're above 55 and you're looking at doing some planning, this is an excellent video on Social Security. You can click on the website and learn how you can maximize your Social Security. It's about a 2-minute video, and I highly recommend that you take a look at it. Particularly if you're 60 and above, you need to really look at it, because this can be an integral part of your planning. You've paid into Social Security for 40 years, so you need to know what your money's going to do for you when you start taking it.
Well, and it's a great learning tool, even if you're in your 30s and your 40s. Start learning these things, because you're going to have parents who may not have the opportunity to listen to the Knowledge Trust and figure out how to do these things. And you you can pass it on to your parents, and you can pass it on to your coworkers too. What a lot of times you can just give a tip or a thought that has gets somebody looking at other options, and they'll be very grateful.
Well, you know, it's very interesting, because I had a lady come in off the program, and we were talking, and I have referred her to your office, Kevin, because of a tax situation. And it's kind of an interesting situation, because her grandmother, or mother, is in her 80s, and at 65 she had a pension benefit, but she never took it. And for whatever reason, she never took it. Now it's 20 years down the road, and they wrote her a letter saying, hey, you haven't taken these funds, and you've got to take you're supposed to be taking these funds. So I would think, under the law, now that's a qualified plan, that money's taxable, and isn't a pension benefit at 70 and a half just like an IRA, where you have to take your required distributions if you're not taking it?
A individually owned employer pension plan, I am not sure on that. If there's
it'd be a company owned pension plan, but you'd be the
company owned, right?
The beneficiary, yeah.
Right.
But I'm wondering, is there going to be a tax, because they were telling her that they didn't know if they could send the funds out because of the tax ramifications.
In other words, they would have to withhold significantly on it.
Maybe so.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I would think the plan would have its set of rules, and you know, whether it has to distribute before they're 70 and a half or after, I'm not sure. And I don't think that you have to take it. I don't think you ever have to take it.
Where would the funds go? Because a lot of those don't have contingent beneficiaries or even beneficiaries, because they're based only on the life payout of the person while they're alive.
Well,
so you could be disinheriting your heirs.
That's right. But ultimately, they could end up with the Bureau of State Lands.
That's what I was afraid of.
If you really waited too long, I think, you know. But I'm going to guess that those are what we would call a defined benefit plan.
Yes.
And so it may be that the plan has some rules in it that say where it's supposed to go. I don't know.
There are
very few of those left anymore.
She told me she got a letter saying that they asked her what she wanted to do with these benefits, and that she needs to be taking them out. And so now they're talking to them, and now they're going back and saying, well, we got to talk to the trust company to make sure that we can pay these funds out because of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But they sent the letter to kind of open up the gate. And I would think if you open up the gate, you got some, and I told her that she might want to, you know, consult with them first, and then maybe even talk to an attorney about whether the trust has to pay her the funds out to her mother. The question I had is about the taxation at 70 and a half, if she's not taking those payments, and those payments are accrued to her, and then she receives the payment. Is she going to have to go back and pay
a penalty because she didn't take a required minimum distribution? I don't believe so.
You don't believe so?
I don't believe so. I don't think this is a. I can't think of the code section, but
They're not really a deferred thing. They're money that the company put in
exactly.
For this,
well, it's a deferred comp, because you're deferring the the cash as a benefit instead of getting cash. You're getting a deferred benefit that is coming back to you.
This was coming out of their pay originally?
Well, there's a pension. When you negotiate a pension benefit,
yeah,
it's part of your negotiated contract. So that from a tax standpoint, I'm not really sure how that jives out.
I would say the deferred portion, that would be maybe something along the lines of a 401k you'd have a problem with.
Okay.
But if it's a defined benefit employer pension, I think that's a different treated under a different section, and I don't believe it is subject.
Well,
to.
I like your ruling. I hope you're the.
I was agreeing with him.
I hope you're the ruling judge because that's good because I told her they need to contact them immediately and get the funds.
Yeah,
because you know you want to have the cash in your hand.
Cash in hand
helps.
Yeah.
Well, listen, if somebody wants to get a hold of you guys, how do they do it, Kevin?
We're at BakerColson.com, and we're out the east side of Gresham, 2414 Northeast Division, and our phone number is 503-666-5569.
And Carl?
WarrenAllen.com, 503-255-8795, conveniently located on 122nd Avenue, one block north of Gleason.
Oh, I like that. We're conveniently located right off the 205 at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103. And you can reach us at 503-253-3000 or toll-free 877-50-PRICE. And you can also go on the web, like I was mentioning, go on the website at pfgwm.com. I've got a couple of new videos, one, choosing an investment advisor, and two, learn how to maximize your Social Security. And I can tell you, if you have anybody, like Kevin was saying, if your neighbors or your friends or your relatives are getting close to Social Security age, this is an excellent video that you ought to be aware of and have people take a look at. We always say knowledge is power, and so it never hurts to have too much knowledge about what you're looking at. Well, we've got about three more minutes, so we've not got enough time for a call. But we kind of can talk about little market conditions here, and you know we had our call last week with Rodney Johnson, and of course we've seen the markets being very volatile, and there's a lot of concern out there of people, and I keep hearing more and more. There's really two school of thoughts in the economic world. There are the guys who are bulls no matter what. They're bullish on the market. They think the market's going to keep hitting new highs every single year, no matter what happens, and it's going to just recover. That's their strategy. There are bears, and the bears are the guys who think, hey, the world's going to fall apart. Now, we kind of like ourselves kind of be in the middle of that. We want to see a bull market, but we also realize you have to have a strategy just in case you're wrong. You want to have a strategy for your serious money to have a defensive strategy. And if you don't, you're going to have that recovery period of 4.5 to 5 years to 8 years. And that's really hard on retired people. I think that's one thing you need to look at. If you're out there and you're looking at your retirement, you need to do an analysis of that and find out where you're really at. Well, guys, that's just about it for this week, and we'll be back next Saturday on Investing Simplified.
And I think we'll have to look a little closer at your retirement pension plan issue. That's a good one.
Okay, good. Well, we'll be back on the air next Saturday. We'll talk about it, and have a great weekend, and enjoy. We're going to have 80-degree weather, I think, on Tuesday. So enjoy it. Get out the suntan lotion. Get a big smile on your face, because the sun always brings that out. Have a great week. Management. Price Financial Group. Wealth.